For the price of a half pint, your pint will overflow. Tolkien fans, we are days away from the ultimate review of Rings of Power Season 2. Join me and fellow hosts from Captain's Pod, Lorehounds, and Rings and Rituals for an epic two-hour livestream event where we break down Amazon's Rings of Power Season 2. We'll explore the story, characters, visuals, music, and how faithful the show is to Tolkien's writings. And we want you to join the conversation. Submit your questions, vote in live polls, and engage with fellow fans. Don't miss out. Secure your spot now at ringspodcast.com/live. A portion of proceeds will go to charity. That's ringspodcast.com/live to reserve your place in the ultimate review of Rings of Power. Who is eldest in Middle-earth? What's up with Galadriel's hair? And did we just discover the Yoda of Middle-earth? Join me, Aaron, your guide to wandering Middle-earth as we explore and review Episode 2 of Season 2 of Rings of Power, titled Eldest. Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. Your contributions keep this show a-wandering. If you would like to support the show, head over to ringspodcast.com/member today. Now, let's wander. In this episode of Rings of Power, Elrond and Galadriel take a small group of elves to Eregion, discovering a broken bridge, Barrowites, and Adar's orc army. The stranger discovers someone even stranger than him, Nori and Poppy find a new friend, and Arondir and Isildur encounter a mysterious couple. Our first bit of wandering today will actually not be the title of this episode. I know I usually start there because titles reveal quite a bit. However, today this one-word title provides some complication, because who actually is eldest? More on this later. Let's start with Elrond and Galadriel, as they lead a company of elves to send a message to Celebrimbor in Eregion. I want to make a comment about how Galadriel has her hair in this scene on the bridge. It's braided, but also encircling her head like a crown. This is a nice touch, because this is literally the translation of her name. Let me provide you with a few references from Karl Hostetter's book, The Nature of Middle-earth. In one instance, Tolkien translates the name Galadriel as, quote, Lady of the Radiant Crown, referring to the shining of her golden hair. In another place, Tolkien wrote, quote, The name Alatariel is Teleren in form. Its original meaning was Maid of the Glittering Coronal. Alatariel is another name for Galadriel. Remember this name, Alatariel, because we'll hear it a little later on. And lastly, quote, The name Galadriel is in this form Sindarin. Its original meaning was Lady of the Glittering Coronal, referring to the brilliant sheen of her golden hair, which in her youth she wore in three long braids, the middle one being wound about her head. As they try to decide where to head next, the elf with the map says that they could go through the hills of Tir An-Gorthad. In Unfinished Tales, that is the name for the Barrowdowns that was given by Tolkien himself. However, in the Second Age, there were no wights there, because both Unfinished Tales and the appendices note that those evil spirits were sent there by the King of the Nazgul, yet he does not exist at the time of Rings of Power Season 2. Let's go to the east, where the stranger encounters a farmer, who is more than he appears. If you have listened to the soundtrack for this season, like I and my family have been, then perhaps you, like my 6-year-old daughter, were able to identify this farmer. If the ring-a-ding-dillo wasn't enough, when he quietly chants, rain and cloudy weather, that was enough for my daughter to jump on her feet, point to the TV, and say, that's old Tom Bombadil. She can't quite say Bombadil. I think that's a dad win, right? In a callback to the Fellowship of the Ring book, the stranger gets sucked into the old tree, which we later learn is named Old Man Ironwood. That scene may be unfamiliar to you, unless you've read the book or seen the Two Towers extended edition. In both cases, Merry and Pippin are consumed by a tree and are saved. In the book, Tom Bombadil does the saving. In the film, Treebeard does. For a refresher on how that scene played out in the book, check out episode number 159 of Lore of the Rings. But that's not the only parallel between the stranger's experience with Tom and Frodo's encounter with him. More on this in a moment. First, we need to get to Nori and Poppy, who discover a new friend and a whole village of stores. From the prologue to the Fellowship of the Ring, we read this, quote, Their most ancient legends, meaning the Hobbit's most ancient legends, hardly looked further back than their wandering days. Before the crossing of the mountains, the hobbits had already become divided into three somewhat different breeds: Harfoots, Stores, and Followhides. The Harfoots were browner of skin, smaller and shorter, and they were beardless and bootless. Their hands and feet were neat and nimble, and they preferred highlands and hillsides. The Stores were broader, heavier in build. Their feet and hands were larger, and they preferred flatlands and riversides. So that's about it about the Stores, and even that was in reference to the Third Age. I can find no reference to Stores or Harfoots in the Second Age, which is the time of the Rings of Power show. But there's yet another line that connects the stranger to Gandalf. The Goond of the Stores calls Nori's friend, quote, a great big grand elf, providing a supposed origin to Gandalf's name. Oh man, I just used supposed again. I gotta get more creative about that. The bronze-masked man informs the dark wizard that the stranger is heading towards the Hermit. If you remember from Season 1, the three cultists told the stranger that the name of the constellation he was searching for was called the Hermit's Hat. Calling Tom a hermit is a Rings of Power invention, as far as I can tell. But if you know of a reference for that, send it my way. Let's return to the stranger and Tom, and we're going to track these events and compare them to Frodo's encounter with Tom in the Fellowship of the Ring book. If you've listened to this show, even in the last 2 or 3 months, you know we've been exploring each chapter of Fellowship, and we recently completed the 3 chapters in which Tom shows up. So first, he needs to save the stranger from being sucked into an old tree. Just as Tom saved Merry and Pippin in the book, Tom releases the stranger from the tree and says, quote, what be you a-thinking of? You should not be waking. Eat earth, dig deep, drink water, go to sleep. The first question that Frodo is able to ask about Tom is, quote, who is Tom Bombadil? In similar fashion, the stranger asks, who are you? Tom's answer to the stranger reveals that he used to dwell around the Withy Windle. That is a river between the Shire and Bree, although I'm not sure it was actually named that during this time. When they are in the house of Tom Bombadil, the stranger first gets a bath in hot water. Likewise, the hobbits were able to wash their hands and faces and refresh themselves. After washing, the hobbits had a wonderful meal with Tom, just like the stranger. They also hear Goldberry's beautiful voice, although the hobbits actually get to see Goldberry, whereas the stranger does not, at least not yet. Tom mentions to the stranger that the stars are newcomers, because to him, they are. Eventually, the stranger will come to ask Tom what he is. This question, what is Tom Bombadil, has plagued fans and scholars alike for decades. And go back a few episodes to listen to my conversation with Ian from Thoughts on Tolkien about why this is such an important question. But Tom gives the stranger an answer similar to what he gives Frodo in the book. Quote, don't you know my name yet? That's the only answer. Tell me, who are you, alone, yourself, and nameless? But you are young and I am old. Eldest, that's what I am. And skipping along a bit, quote, Tom knew the dark under the stars when it was fearless, before the Dark Lord came from outside. Yes, indeed, Tom calls himself eldest, and he is. He has been on the earth since even before the stars were in the sky. Now, everything that we've seen of Tom up to this point has been spot on. He's using lines from the Fellowship of the Ring, he speaks somewhat nonsensically, he's laughing and merry, and he sings Ring-a-ding-dillo. But then the conversation turns when the stranger asks Tom to teach him. And it's not a turn for the better. The stranger asks about magic, about controlling it, and Tom mentions the other Ishtar, the dark wizard, and eventually tells the stranger that his task is to face both Sauron and the dark wizard. Here's my issue with it. Tom Bombadil is not Jedi Master Yoda. The stranger isn't Luke Skywalker, who has sought out the crazy, kooky, ancient master of secret knowledge to teach him the ways of the Force. So-called tests of worthiness are very rare in Lord of the Rings. Think Galadriel being tempted by the One Ring. These things are very rare. Making Tom Bombadil a mentor who imposes a challenge upon the stranger feels like a fundamental misunderstanding of his character. In Tolkien's world, Tom is a being wholly apart from the conflicts of Middle-earth. He exists outside the framework of power and ambition that drives so many of the story's central figures. He's not concerned with tests, worthiness, or the typical hero's journey. Hence why, in the book, the One Ring has no power over him. Check out episode number 164 of Lore of the Rings for that tale. Tom's strength lies in his detachment from the struggles over control and domination that define the world around him. To cast him as a gatekeeper or instructor in the traditional sense diminishes the unique mystique and neutrality that make Tom Bombadil such a compelling and enigmatic character in Tolkien's Legendarium. So while I do love elements of how Tom Bombadil is portrayed so far in Rings of Power, I think it falls prey to so many other things in this show. It is a departure of the spirit and meaning of Tolkien's work, even if it has the outward trappings of his world. Well, the Stranger's task is to face Sauron and the Dark Wizard. But what is your task as a wanderer of Middle-earth? You don't have to face the Dark Lord, but you can do one or all of the following. Whip open your podcast player and leave a 5 newcomer star rating or review. And while you're there, tap that share link and send this episode to a friend. And also make sure you're subscribed so that you don't miss out on any new episodes. And if you really love the wandering we do together, you can show your appreciation by heading to ringspodcast.com/donate and providing a little financial boost to the show.
We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Fellow Wanderer, I want to hear your thoughts on Rings of Power Season 2. I've watched the episodes, dug into Tolkien's writing, and shared my reactions, but now I want to hear from you. And yes, there is a chance you could win an Amazon gift card. Head over to ringspodcast.com/survey and answer a few questions I've put together about Season 2. At the end, just enter your email for a chance to win a $15 Amazon gift card. But here's the deal. The survey closes at 10 p.m. Eastern on October 10th. That's next Thursday. So if you want your thoughts included, don't wait. Go to ringspodcast.com/survey today and share your impressions of Rings of Power Season 2. That's ringspodcast.com/survey. Thanks, and I can't wait to hear from you. We return to Elrond and Galadriel as their road takes them through the Bardo Downs. These burial mounds are ancient. They go back to the darkest days in the First Age, before the forefathers of men wandered into the west and became friends of elves. But the wights, or evil spirits, that inhabit the Barrows, did not arrive until the Third Age of Middle-earth, when they were sent there by the Witch King of Angmar, otherwise known as the Chief of the Nazgul, as I mentioned before. Their little chant, however, is pretty chilling, and I do not recommend listening to that song late at night after everyone else has gone to bed and you're researching Tolkien lore for a podcast episode that you are preparing and all of a sudden that creepy chant starts playing in your ear. Yeah, don't do that. This song that they sing is from a pretty chilling scene from Fellowship of the Ring that is skipped in the films. I go into a lot of detail in Lore of the Rings episode number 166 if you want to dive deeper on that. For today though, I've had two people independently mention to me that the song that the wights chant reminds them of Gollum. Well, that's good, because Gollum sings a very similar song in the Two Towers film. In fact, the words are nearly identical. Again, to go deeper on that, check out episode number 166 of Lore of the Rings. We discover here that it was the wights who were disrupting communications between Lindon and Eregion. I have an issue with the fighting the wights scene. Elrond says, quote, "According to lore, only the blades with which they were buried will return such creatures to rest." So if Elrond knew this, then why did he order an attack, knowing that their weapons would have no effect? Why wasn't his first order, "Hey, crack open that door and grab that spear"? Plus, how would Elrond have known that supposed lore? Ah, dang, there's me saying suppose again. It's just a terrible habit. Especially, how would he have known if they didn't know that wights were inhabiting the mounds? Plus, the wights are not actually the spirits of the men buried in the mounds. It just gets a little wonky when you think about it, so perhaps we're not meant to think too much about it. The Bardo weapon idea is an example of Rings of Power trying too hard to explain too much, or rather provide too much of an origin story for things that happen in The Lord of the Rings. For example, Merry's blade is from a barrow, and it will pierce the chief of the Nazgul when Eowyn defeats him later on in Return of the King. But I do have a positive thing to call out. Cutting the groping hand at the wrist is a direct callback to Frodo in Fellowship of the Ring. We return to the woods, where Arondir and Isildur are trying to find Theo. These scenes are a little bit confusing to me. First they're in the woods in the north, then they're back in the city, then they go out looking again. I do enjoy seeing Isildur growing up and being on his own, but the whole Astrid and Theo story arc is not really advancing anything for me in terms of the Rings of Power. There's the whole sinking into the mud scene, after which Arondir says that monster, you know, is a nameless thing from one of the deep places of the world, except tonight they're going to call it supper. A pretty good laugh line. But that line from Arondir calls to my mind this line from Gandalf in the book, quote, "Far, far below the deepest delvings of the dwarves, the world is gnawed by nameless things. Even Sauron knows them not. They are older than he." So the mud creature has some precedence, if we want to assume that the mud is a deep place in the world and that monster is one of those nameless things, but, you know, okay. And besides that, having something that is nameless and all the focus on names in this and other episodes, I'm beginning to pick up a theme about names in Rings of Power that I'm going to have to dig deeper on in the future. Let's go back to the stores. The Goond tells Nori a story of a store named Burroughs who went looking for the Suzat. When I first heard Suzat, I thought for sure that was a Rings of Power invention, for sure. But I did some digging, and I was wrong. Two references for you. First, in Appendix F of The Lord of the Rings, this one's about translation, so I usually skip it. You'll find this, quote, "The name of the Shire, and in parentheses, Susa, and all other places of the Hobbits have thus been Englished." So there's the origins for Susa, but that's still not quite Suzat like the Goond said. So let's go further. In Volume 12 of The History of Middle-earth, yes, you heard me right, Volume frickin' 12, I found this gem, quote, "The Shire seems to me very adequately to translate the Hobbit Suzat, since this word was now only used by them with reference to their country." So Suzat is of Tolkien origin, and it is in reference to the Shire. In any case, neither the Stores nor the Harfoots know of such a place. Curious thing to note here, Nori in Season 1 wonders what's out there. In Season 2, she wanders out there. That reminds me of the line from The Walking Song, quote, "Not all those who wonder or wander are lost." Listen carefully, and you can hear the theme from This Wandering Day playing in the background as Nori speaks in this scene. And we have yet to explore one of the biggest surprises of this episode, the Ents. We'll get to that right after this break. For the price of a half pint, your pint will overflow. Tolkien fans, we are days away from the ultimate review of Rings of Power Season 2. Join me and fellow hosts from Captain's Pod, Lorehounds, and Rings and Rituals for an epic 2-hour live stream event where we break down Amazon's Rings of Power Season 2. We'll explore the story, characters, visuals, music, and how faithful the show is to Tolkien's writings. And we want you to join the conversation. Submit your questions, vote in live polls, and engage with fellow fans. Don't miss out. Secure your spot now at ringspodcast.com/live. A portion of proceeds will go to charity. That's ringspodcast.com/live to reserve your place in the ultimate review of Rings of Power. Fellow Wanderer, I want to hear your thoughts on Rings of Power Season 2. I've watched the episodes, dug into Tolkien's writing, and shared my reactions, but now I want to hear from you. And yes, there is a chance you could win an Amazon gift card. Head over to ringspodcast.com/survey and answer a few questions I've put together about Season 2. At the end, just enter your email for a chance to win a $15 Amazon gift card. But here's the deal. The survey closes at 10 p.m. Eastern on October 10th. That's next Thursday. So if you want your thoughts included, don't wait. Go to ringspodcast.com/survey today and share your impressions of Rings of Power Season 2. That's ringspodcast.com/survey. Thanks, and I can't wait to hear from you. I was thrilled, so thrilled, to see an Entwife. I think I've mentioned this before, but when I first read Treebeard telling the hobbits that he had lost the Entwives, my young heart broke for poor Treebeard, and I wondered, what happened to the Entwives? And unfortunately for you, I'm not going to dig into that today. But a couple of things to note here.
I find it interesting that the Entwife, Winterbloom, asks Arondir about if he ever put an axe to living wood before. Let's go back to Tolkien's Silmarillion, where one of the Valar, named Yavanna, is concerned for living things, particularly plants. As she says, quote, "Would that the trees might speak on behalf of all things that have roots, and punish those that wrong them." To this request, Manwë, the king of the Valar, remember we explored a bit about him and his eagles in the previous episode, Manwë promises to Yavanna, quote, "In the forests shall walk the shepherds of the trees." Yavanna is so thrilled with this that she turns to her husband, Aule, the Valar who created the dwarves, and says, quote, "Now let thy children beware, for there shall walk a power in the forests whose wrath they will arouse at their peril." For a deeper dive on that tale, check out episode number 2 of Lore of the Rings. I think that gives you enough context to understand more deeply why the Entwife, Winterbloom, was so angry towards Arondir and Isildur. And I think it's telling that Arondir's promise to look after the woods of the land is made in Isildur's presence, as they are standing in lands that will eventually be part of Gondor and under the protection of Isildur. These two Ents claim to have tended this forest for a long, long time. As they say, quote, "Since before the mountains rose up and divided it. The mountains of Mordor had not always existed there. So you know that these Ents have tended trees for far longer than even the elves had been awake." Now that we've seen both Tom Bombadil and the Ents, let's return to the title of this episode, Eldest. As we explored before, Tom introduced himself as Eldest, and he certainly is. But here's the complication, and I think it is really interesting that this episode of Rings of Power is both titled Eldest and features Ents. In the Return of the King book, Gandalf invites Théoden to meet Treebeard, and he calls the Ent, quote, "For Treebeard is Fëanor, and the eldest and chief of the Ents. And when you speak with him, you will hear the speech of the oldest of all living things." Also, in Return of the King, Treebeard the Ent remarks to Celeborn and Galadriel that he doesn't believe they will meet again. Celeborn answers him saying, quote, "I do not know, eldest." So that is twice that Treebeard the Ent is referred to as eldest, and yet Tom claims that he is eldest in Middle-earth. So who actually is eldest? Other hands and minds than mine have wrestled with trying to answer that question for many, many years. Even Tolkien himself. In a draft letter, which he never sent, Tolkien wrote that, quote, "If in time Tom was primeval, he was eldest in time." So the title of this episode refers to Tom Bombadil, but it's a really nice lore callback to include Ents in the same episode. Well done. Some final thoughts on the closing sequence of the episode, where Elrond and Galadriel stumble upon Adar and his orc army, and Galadriel fights a bunch of orcs all on her own. It's a nice touch of the map overlaying the journey that the army has taken. The timing is somewhat messy, though, because an army that huge would take several months to make that distance, especially if they can move only at night. Orcs are trying to hunt a horse, saying, "That's our supper getting away." Remember that orcs indeed eat horses, as was mentioned in The Hobbit, and I shared that with you in the previous episode. We see the ring's power in action, as the wound from the arrow was healed right under Galadriel's hand. Now I'm not sure that that kind of magic healing is what Tolkien had in mind when he wrote these words through Elrond in the Fellowship of the Ring book, quote, "Those who made them, the three rings, did not desire strength or domination or hoarded wealth, but understanding, making, and healing to preserve all things unstained." But it's a decent interpretation, I guess. And one last bit of lore to share with you. When Adar captures Galadriel, he addresses her in a formal elvish greeting. If you read the English translation as he speaks, you'll see he says, "Lady Galadriel." But listen closely. He doesn't actually say Galadriel. He calls her by another name. It's a name that you should now recognize. I mentioned it before, like 2 or 3 times. It's a name that has to do with Galadriel's golden hair being braided and then encircling her head as if it were a crown. He calls her Alatariel. Let's get to scoring. From 1 to 5 wizard staffs. Story. The stranger is moving forward, but Elrond and Galadriel's story is merely okay, And Isildur and Arondir's side quests are kind of pointless to me. So, two. Characters, I'm mixed on this, because Tom is half amazing, half not. Plus, Elrond is still kind of bugging me. However, Isildur is growing on me, so let's go with a three. Dialogue. I loved hearing so many lines straight from Tolkien's works. That's great. Plus, the Ents' lines were really amazing, especially as they described what peace meant for them. There's also some neat words that are from deep, deep lore. So let's go, and I hope you're sitting down for this, let's go with a 5. Out of character for me, I know, but I am feeling generous today. Visuals. I'm going to knock this one down to a 3. The Ent faces were a little odd to me. Plus, some of the actors' blocking and movements just seemed forced or wrong. Music. Again, really subtle clues as to what's happening, and when I notice certain themes that communicate a deeper meaning in the scene, that's a win. So 5 for this episode. I wish we had more singing from Tom and Goldberry, though. Lore faithfulness. This episode is a real struggle for me. On the one hand, so many amazing callbacks and gems. Looking around my desk right now, I have like 9 Tolkien books spread out and open, which indicates to me lots of deep lore that I had to research. Galadriel's hair, the Hobbit word for the Shire, Tom and the Ents being eldest, all big pluses. And yet, the timing confusion with the Barrowites, Elrond's solution to that problem, the treatment of the Three Rings, Tom becoming Yoda, there's more than a few negatives here as well. But I am feeling generous, so surprise for lore faithfulness, I'm giving this episode a 4. Overall score for episode 4, Eldest of Rings of Power, season 2, 3.7 Wizard Staffs, which ties with episode 2 for highest score so far. But what do you think? Send me a note on Instagram or Twitter at Lore of the Rings Podcast, or even send me a voice message or note at ringspodcast.com. Remember, you can tap the little gray microphone button in the bottom corner at ringspodcast.com to send me a voicemail. And big thank you to The Old One, the executive producer for this episode. If you would like to support The Wandering of Middle-earth, head to ringspodcast.com/member to find a membership that fits you. Thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.